Welcome to Books in the Freezer, a podcast dedicated to the deliciously disturbing world of horror fiction. I'm your host, Stephanie, and today I am joined by Desiree S. Evans and Ceresia J. Fennell to talk about their wonderful young adult anthology, The Black Girl Survives in This One. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Oh my gosh, I had so much fun with this book. Can I just say, can I fangirl a little bit for a second? Like, I loved it.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
It opens up so strongly with Harvesters, I think, is the opening story. And like, wow, did that set the tone? And I think it doesn't outright say, you know, final girl, but I think in my mind, I was expecting like, oh, like a slasher anthology, which I would have loved too. I really loved the variety in the stories here. Like, they really took all different kinds of shapes and turns and directions. So just wanted to say I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Yay. That was exactly our goal with this anthology, is to kind of give a taste of a little bit of everything under the horror genre and even subgenres. Shout out to Desiree, because she, even when we were like reaching out to the contributor, she was like, I'm going to send them this thing so that they kind of know they can go beyond probably the thing that they're thinking, which was really cool.
The map of the like landscape of horror, like what are these different types of horror, psychological horror, you know, like Norman Bates, we can do slashers, we can do creature horror, you can do, there's so much under the umbrella of horror. And guess what? We can survive in all of those genres.
Yeah.
About what your dream story is and story you always want to write about, and that's kind of what we put out to the contributors.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. There's a story set in space.
Yeah, we love space horror.
So tell me, what is your background with horror? Like, was it something you grew up reading and watching as a kid?
Do you want to go first?
That's yeah, right.
I feel like
I love horror. It's like, you know, people say guilty pleasure. I'm not guilty about it. I love it. I love that it allows us to kind of play with our fears and our anxieties. I grew up the spooky, scared kid, afraid of a lot of things. I have a lot of phobias. And so it's kind of one of those places where I can really like just let go and kind of live, hopefully, and survive vicariously through these different characters. I mentioned to somebody recently that their very first short story I ever wrote was about a ghost. About a ghost girl. And so ever since I was a kid, I always loved the paranormal, the supernatural. When I was in junior high, it was an RL sign, Christopher Pike. I had like 50 of those paperbacks, got it from my Scholastic book fairs, saved up every penny for those. And those really were my gateway horror into the, you know, Dean Koontz, Stephen King's of my teenage life. And it's just been a genre that I've loved ever since.
All right. So spooky girl cred all the way through.
Yeah. For me, I think I have to like give thanks to my brothers, because they were always trying to like freak me out, since I was obviously the younger sibling. So they would be like, oh yeah, we're going to watch The Leprechaun, or we're going to watch Candyman, or we're going to watch, you know, Night of the Living Dead, which Night of the Living Dead was actually one of the first movies that I saw, and I was obsessed with it. I mean, I love zombies. Like, that is my first love. But yeah, shout out to my bros for scaring the crap out of me. I'm like, you know, Bloody Mary, Leprechaun, Candyman, like, you name it. And then,
oh my God.
I think as I got older, I was like, I'm going to watch this stuff and make sure that I'm not scared of it. And so then I got introduced to stuff like Vampire in Brooklyn, where it's like spooky, but also the comedy part of it. And I was like, oh, this is the type of horror I can really get into, because it's just such my personality. But totally got the start with movies, and then definitely with books. I was like, kind of same thing with Desiree, you know, R.L. Stine, devoured all of those. I mean, Goosebumps, and then the TV show in the 90s, I was like, yes, you know, the Twilight Zone. It goes on and on and on. I was just obsessed with all of it. I don't think I started writing it until I was in undergraduate school when I did creative writing, because most of my writing when I was younger was kind of poetry. I think a lot of people always start with poetry, but it was always dark, morbid poetry, like Edgar Allan Poe vibes through and through. So I guess that's totally horror poetry, which is totally a genre, horror poetry. So anyone listening out there, don't let them tell you that poetry does not have horror in it. It does. But yeah, that's kind of how I got into it.
Oh my God. I love
it. And so being like a 90s kid, we had like shows like Are You Afraid of the Dark and like Eerie Indiana and all these kind of really cool shows that were like, yes, you could be a spooky kid and love horror. And I think that really was formative as well.
And was that the thinking behind making this a young adult anthology versus, you know, an adult anthology?
Yeah, we wanted to make sure that young Black teens specifically kind of got to see themselves in this space, because I think I, even though I like devoured a lot of stuff in middle grade, those middle grade years, like when I got to like teen YA reading, it was kind of like what Desiree said, we just jumped to adult books, you know, Stephen King and stuff like that, because I wasn't really seeing it. But even then, I still didn't see like a Black final girl in any of these books, right? It wasn't until like TV and movies where I was like, oh, you know, like here's a Black woman, like Ra Digga, for example, who shows up in 13 Ghosts, or, you know, in Alien versus Predator, Sanaa Lathan, which, you know, I was like, wait, what? Like, you could be Black and like be in a horror setting and you could survive at the end. Like, this is amazeballs. So I wanted to, you know, just kind of give homage to my teen self. But yeah, I mean, lots of other inspirations for that. But I know Desiree and I had several conversations about like why specifically teens, and even why we got some of the adult writers to kind of contribute to a YA collection. It was kind of the same thing, you know?
Yeah, we were seeing this really cool movement happening in horror, you know, in the adult landscape, and we're seeing only that kind of beginning motions of it in YA. And we really wanted to bring it, be part of that conversation and helping to push it, particularly for, you know, Black writers who, you know, have, the last few years have been making some strides, but mostly on the fantasy side. We really wanted to see, like, what about horror? What about getting some of these folks who are dabbling in dark fantasy and kind of have, like, some spooky vibes to give it, you know, to give a really great attempt at writing support.
And I love that. So you did a lot of outreach to specifically adult horror writers for, well, to some adult horror writers for this anthology and this. Oh, her.
It went pretty well. We, you know, thank you to the technologies of Google and, you know, Google Docs and all these ways, we were able to do a lot of kind of joint editing. You know, we tried to all get through each story a couple of times before we discuss it via Zoom. So even though we're like kind of thousands of miles away, we're still able to really collectively collaborate with both ourselves, but also our editors and our agents, who were a great help as well in the process of getting through the stories and reading through the, oh my God, oh, over 80 stories we received in the open call submission. There's so many talented, amazing people out there who love horror like we do, and having that chance to find new voices was such an exciting part of this process as well.
Yeah, and I think what was fun for me during the editing process was I would leave Desiree comments like, I think they could do more. Like, I think this could be even spookier. And, you know, for me, it was always up the ante. But it, yeah, shout out to technology for sure. But yeah, I really enjoyed our conversations and just chatting about the stories. And then after we were done with our edits, you know, we were also able to send it to our two editors at Flatiron, and they would kind of take a look. And it was really cool because a lot of the time our comments were in line. And we were like, oh, okay, you know, because you just never know, like, hello, they're editors by profession, right? And like, we're just editors of this anthology. So it was really cool to see that all come together as well. And also, like, the, you know, having the diversity of the stories, kind of like, if you know, if there was a particular horror that's not, I'm super into or have read up on, and I'm like, is this really what this subgenre kind of like should be doing? It was really nice to be able to talk to other people about that to make sure we were still staying true to some of those subgenres.
Love that. Yeah, there was such a diversity. I mean, you had like horror comedy in a way with like a Queeniums for Greenium. I loved that story, like kind of a snarky MLM crunchy thing, but also like a story about sisters. Like, there was just so many, and both of you had stories in there. So Cerise, you were saying your first love is Night of the Living Dead. So did that come into play with Cemetery Dance Party?
Oh, it totally did. It totally did. So I'm from the Bronx, and we have a famous cemetery, the Woodlawn Cemetery, which there's a lot of famous people who are buried there. But also, they usually host like spooky programming there. Earl Stein has read several times in this cemetery some of his books and stuff like that. So it's always been, you know, on the back of my mind, like if I ever get a chance, I'm definitely gonna set a story in a cemetery. And so I totally did that. And then of course the undead, I had to put my little take on it.
Yeah, it was so fun. I mean, you've got like teens partying, you've got like urban legends, you've got zombies, and then I mean all these stories have such like cool heroines that you can root for, but I always love like a heroine that has like a zinger at the end. Has like a cool like last line. And Desiree, I loved your story, Bride of the Devil's Bayou, just so much. And I loved that it was like one heroine on her own, but she also had this group of supportive friends with her on this journey. Can you tell us a bit about your story?
Yeah, you know, I was really excited to kind of go I guess we both kind of went to our home places to kind of tell these like kind of folkloric urban legends and stories. You know, I had this girl returning home and dealing with the kind of ghosts of the past and kind of that are actually real and very real. And she'd been denying that for a long time. But I love the idea of having that support system, right, with her as well, because it's like sometimes we're not alone. Sometimes our community and our besties got our backs, right? And so being able to talk about like not just one survivor girl, but also survivor girl's bestie there alongside, being supportive as she kind of makes this kind of pilgrimage home to confront her demons, right? And so we don't always have to be confronting our demons on our own.
I loved that. And then as part of the editing process, did you guys decide on the order of the stories? Like, this is going to be the opening story, this is going to be the closing story, and what was the thinking behind that?
Yeah, we did. We talked about like what is the great order. We thought about it a little bit too, and this is where we kind of also tapped into our Flatiron editors as well, because you know they're experts at this. They're like, what would give it a strong start but also a strong middle and a strong end? So thinking about the pacing, thinking about the structure, thinking about kind of putting different stories at different lengths at different parts of the overall arc of it. But yeah, we kind of thought about like what would make a great closing as well, you know, to kind of leave that reader on.
And you said you reached out to some authors who are more in the fantasy or like sci-fi space. So how did you pitch like horror is a great place to explore this concept?
You know what? I feel like most folks, we even reached out to some people who are not even fantasy, like a couple of contemporary folks who are like, oh yeah, sure, I'll try that. I think often we feel like we have to only write within our kind of, you know, genres or categories. But I think people are really often excited to explore new genres and to try their hand at these kind of new aspects of storytelling. And I feel like short stories are a perfect place to do that. You know, it's not a whole novel, although often with a lot of our writers, some of their stories wanted to be novels. So we kind of had to work with that as well. Which is exciting, like, hey, make it a novel. That could be your next step. But folks, seem to be really exciting. Do you, is that what you remember as well?
Yeah. I feel like people were just jumping at the chance again because they're like, oh, you know, with the prompt that the girl has to survive at the end. So it's kind of like, okay, I can do whatever I want here as long as I know that this character has to survive, I think was a really easy lift for a lot of folks who were really excited about that. And yeah, I agree with Desiree that there were some that I was like, man, the story is so good. It's kind of long. I don't know. How are we gonna get them to cut this back? And there's even some, I think, you know, the nature girl story is a little on the longer side, but it was so good. We were like, I don't know, how do we cut this down?
That was a good story.
Yeah.
Another thing with this anthology is that the reader is going in knowing that this person survives, and there is still so much tension and so much suspense in these stories.
Yeah, and you know, that's one thing about the survivor girl, the final girl trope in general. You know, when we're watching I Know What You Did Last Summer or watching Scream, we know that she's going to survive. But we want to know how. We want to know who else is going to get it. We want to know, like, all that she goes through in order to come out, you know, at the end. And that's when we, you know, often we're like, oh, you know, make it scarier. Put it through more. Some of our editorial notes. Let her suffer a little bit more before coming out, because we wanted to show that process. We wanted to really have our teen, our young adult readers see that, you know, you can go through a lot but still come out okay on the other side. And that's the kind of cathartic part of reading this sort of horror.
Yeah. Do you think authors were holding back a bit because it was young adult?
Well, we had a couple of, you know, adult writers who were like, we don't want to make it too scary. I'm like, no, teens love scary. Like, it's okay.
Yeah. 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 So we're like, no, you can do this in YA. It's fine.
Yeah. YA, the Hunger Games, YA has gone to places, you know, for the last 20 years. And even before that, thinking about the teen fiction of the 90s. Yeah. You know, a lot of challenging, you know, you had a lot of social realism going on in the 90s in terms of the teen fiction. But, teens go through a lot, and that's something that I think, you know, horror as a genre can be such a metaphor for, is that, you know, we go through a lot of horrors. We see a lot, you know, particularly this generation, and horror again is a safe place to process our fears, our anxieties, the way the world scares us, right? And so we're that's kind of what we're going through when we think about what kind of stories can you write for YA.
Horror is a great place for that, and the stakes are high in these. Like, there is a body count in some of these, you know. And
that's the best part. I love the bodies. I'm like, yes, give me more.
You blow up enough? Okay, yeah.
I'm like, is there enough gore in the?
Well, I mean, so many of us like discovered horror and fell in love with it, you know, at this age or even earlier. And, you know, that's true for teens today.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're looking for this. All right. Well, one thing that I ask people on the show is for something they have been enjoying in horror lately. Do you have a spooky thing you've been into recently?
I can go first. Okay. I'll say two things. Definitely Yellow Jackets. Like, if you have not binged that yet, you need to do it. And of course, if you like gore, you'll really enjoy it, like me. And then The Blackening. I've watched that a couple of times. It's so good. I think the actors just did a really good job, and it's so fun. Like we were just discussing, to just see Black characters in a horror setting, and even twisting some of the tropes on their head. Like there's a board game scene that I kind of won't, you know, give up to anyone. There's like Black trivias, like how Black are you? And like that scene just had me laughing so hard. I was like, this is amazing. But then there were some jump scares in there too. And I was like, oh yeah, this is so dope. I've watched it at least four times.
And I love that's in the tradition of like a lot of the horror comedies we're seeing, you know, Black filmmakers coming up with, you know, in the 90s to kind of mock, you know, the mainstream horrors that were coming out where we didn't really exist in, or kind of horror comedies. I really love that it's in that tradition, as well as kind of taking on these tropes that have been in such discussion over the last few years, including the final girl trope, right? Mm-hmm. So yes, Yellow Jackets, oh my God, you know, this is just something about teen girls and horror, and just like that, just so it's in the 90s nostalgia and all of it. One of my guilty favorite, like, okay, not so guilty, but favorite pleasures of the horror variety is I love a good serial killer K-drama. And so that's been my kind of pandemic era, like when I need to just go home, I'll just put on, there's a certain flavor of Korean drama that loves serial killers. And there's a few out there that are just like, give me those 20, 30 episodes. I'll just spend a weekend lost in the serial killer
I didn't know this was a subgenre at all. Please tell me more. Yeah. Like, give me some titles.
People tend to think of, like, you know, romantic comedy,
yeah,
dramas. But yeah, there's like they have some dark ones that are great. Oh my goodness! But yeah, that's one of my like favorite kind of go tos of the moment when I need to get lost.
Fun. These are all vibes. I love Yellow Jackets. Absolutely mm-hmm. love everything about it. These teen girls. It's a show that goes there. It's okay. And The Blackening, I told you earlier, has been on my to watch list. I am waiting for it. I keep checking for it to like come to a streaming service mm-hmm. that I have. So what is like the premise to that? Is like they all mm-hmm. like this group finds themselves in a situation. And...
yeah, so they're kind of like in a little reunion, right? They're kind of like in this cabin style, you know, like Airbnb situation, and you're like, yeah, we're gonna go see like all these friends that we haven't seen in a couple of years. It's gonna be great. We're gonna play some games, we're gonna have some drinks, and then just like weird stuff starts happening, and of course there's like someone who disappears. It's kind of like, I'll be right back, like that kind of trope. And then they're like, hey, they haven't come back. Where are they? Let's go find them, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's like a scene in the woods. It has like a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I think when I was in high school, one of my favorite traditions was when Scary Movie 2 came out on VHS. Mm-hmm. I would watch that every night before bed. Don't ask, y'all. Do not ask. But it was just like a part of my tradition. I'm like, I've had a long day at school. I'm going to eat dinner, you know, have a bath. And then I'm popping the VCR on and throwing this VHS in. And it just gave me so much of those vibes where, you know, you're like Desiree was saying, like there are all of these wonderful horror movies that came out. You didn't really get to see a lot of Black people playing in those characters. And so The Blackening does that a little bit. It's not as funny as Scary Movie 2, but I think it's actually a little bit more scarier because there's comedy relief, but like the characters kind of stay in that spooky setting, which is really great. I think you'll like it. And also for people who are just like, oh wow, yeah, I, you know, like you see caricatures or stereotypes of Black people in certain stuff, and then they're playing on that, and it's like, oh, this is really fun to watch because mm-hmm. you're getting that part of it, but then at the same time, it's comedic relief.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly.
But it's so good. I really like it. I wish I could write a script like that.
I'm sure you could. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. Keep hyping me up, y'all.
I could see it. I do. I love that self-aware media that's really digging into kind of like cultural criticisms of like portrayals we've seen in media. And I think we started to see a bit of that in the 90s. I mean, like, we didn't really go all the way because we had like Jada Pinkett Smith at the beginning of Scream 2 saying like, this is what's going to happen. And then still succumbing to that. That's still very much being her fate. Mm-hmm. So like even the knowledge of it didn't save her. Mm-hmm. You're like, ah.
Yeah, exactly.
You're still only allowed to play one role, even in the meta series about horror, you know? And so it was interesting to think about, yeah, that's true. You know, even like in you have that in Scream, but you also have in like I Know What You Did Last Summer, you have Brandy as still the best friend, the sassy best friend. She survives, but she still is, you know, she could never be the star because that's not her role and not her place. That's something we really wanted to kind of take on and challenge, that idea of like, you know, we don't only have to be, you know, as we say, the first to die or the magical friend, the magical Negro trope that kind of gives advice and helps the protagonist to survive, or, you know, the sassy best friend. There can be the role where you are the main character.
Yeah.
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 I did love that. And I feel like it definitely succeeded. Sorry, you were going to say something.
No, I was going to say one other thing came to mind that's also a favorite. And I rewatched it a couple of times actually recently because the next season got canceled or whatever. It wasn't greenlit. But The Horrors of Dolores Roach.
Mm.
Like,
I heard about the show.
It's so good. It's so good. It's very gory, but it's so good. If you like Sweeney Todd, I feel like you would kind of be into this. But yeah, I was really bummed that it didn't get greenlit for another season. I was like, boy, it's so good.
Was that a Netflix one?
No, I think
was it Prime?
It was Prime. Yeah, it was on Prime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have been victimized by loving a season, by loving a season of something, and then for it not to get renewed. I remember that was an audio drama podcast series first.
Got
adapted into a show, and I heard good things, so I'll have to watch it, even though
go check out the audio drama.
Knowing that it only has one season. Well, the second tradition we have on the show, and I think fits very nicely with this anthology, is we ask our guests for a final girl song. So if you're the final girl in the movie, what is your song that is playing?
This is a hard one.
It is. You know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm going to go with I'm a Survivor. Destiny Child, Survivor. I'm sure I have like other songs that I would probably play, but that one just seems very apt.
Yeah, it is. That is Final Girl vibes, literally.
Final Girl vibes. For some reason, I'm thinking of, I was a 90s teen, so I was thinking of this song by New York called Alarm Call, which is very, very obscure to some folks, I'm sure. But basically, it's a song about waking up, and waking up, it's an emergency. And so that's probably what would be going through my head as New York does this little, her like, siren kind of serenade as I race across the street towards hopefully survival.
That's great. So yours is playing after you've already vanquished the evil and you're like Destiny's Child survivor. You're like,
yes, like I did that. That was me.
Yes, I did that. Mm-hmm. I love it.
And yours is like running, like in progress. I'm
towards making that leap.
I love it. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on here and chatting with me. Listeners, please check out The Black Girl Survives in this one, coming out in April from Flatiron. And where can people find you online?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Literary Desiree. And you can search up my website as well, DesireeEvans.com.
Yeah, I'm across social at SJ_Fennell. And if you want to visit my website, it's ThereseaFennell.com. But yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much again for taking time out of your day to come chat with me.
Thank you for having us. This was so fun.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
Books in the Freezer is a bi-weekly podcast. We post episodes every other Tuesday. You can find us on Threads, Instagram, and TikTok at booksinthefreezer.com, or you can send us an email at booksinthefreezer@gmail.com. Show notes for this episode and all previous episodes are at booksinthefreezer.com, where you will find a list of books mentioned, as well as links to merch and other various ways to support the podcast, like Patreon and affiliate links. I have been your host, Stephanie Gagne. Thank you for listening, and see you next time on Books in the Freezer.